Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Caberti, founder of the Content Marketing Plaza, bringing you 3 new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. And before we jump into today's episode, let me ask you a quick question. How much would your life change if you could make 6 figures from your content? Imagine being able to quit your 9-to-5 job, do what you love for a living, and spend more time with your family. That's what we help our students do at the Content Marketing Plaza, an 8-week program that will help you build your way to 6 figures via your content. You can learn more about the Plaza by heading over to contentmarketingplaza.com, which will be in the show notes. All right, let's jump right back into the episode. One of the things that prevents us from really hitting our goals and achieving the things that we want to achieve are some of the barriers that are in our way. And a lot of those barriers really boil down to the mind. And even if you look at some external factor, it's how you interpret it that makes it a barrier. So we're going to focus in this episode on how do we break down some of these barriers, many of them that we impose on ourselves, and with this knowledge, take back our lives and really be able to accomplish those goals that we have for ourselves. So today's guest who will be joining us today, he has spent the last 10 years working directly with hundreds of clients and advising thousands of others through his workshops and seminars. He is the author of Lifetime Physique and has been voted best of the best trainers in his home state of Colorado. He has appeared on Fox, NBC, and the CW Network, and has been on radio across the country. Today's guest for episode 317 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Stu Schaefer. Stu, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
It is so awesome to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Stu, I'm really happy to have you on the show. Earlier, I mentioned your book, Lifetime Physique. You also wrote another book, The Novo Method, which is exactly what we are going to focus on in this episode. There's a lot of really awesome insights in that book, which will be in the show notes. But can you give us a little background into why you wrote the Novo Method and what it's all about?
Absolutely. Okay, so I've been working with hundreds, now thousands of people. And initially, years ago, I was a personal trainer. That's when I wrote Lifetime Physique. And in it, I kind of put some of the mental tactics to get motivated if you were trying to lose weight or start a workout program or whatever. And then as I worked with, you know, all these hundreds of clients, I started seeing these patterns emerge where for no reason a client would self-sabotage or fail or all of a sudden stop hitting progress. Likewise, when I got into the, you know, self-help, personal growth, life coaching realm, with both people and like athletes, same kind of things were happening. So I looked kind of in my own life. I had taken some personal development workshops because I love that work myself. And I really started investigating to figure out why people fail or self-sabotage or whatever it might be. And out of that, I came up with 10 of the most common reasons that I saw the majority of people running into. Now, some people just had one of them. Some people, a lot of people had multiple of these issues, and they're so common. I bet you've had it. I've run into these issues. And so these 10 I put in this book, The Novo Method, and each chapter goes over these common mental blocks and then different techniques and exercises that anyone can do to overcome them. So that they can really see that success that they want to, whether it's in fitness and diet, whether it's in financial, business, relationship, whatever.
And it's interesting you mentioned the self-sabotage. I mean, we all definitely do it to various degrees, some of us more than others. And I think one of the big things that goes into either self-sabotage or being able to achieve massive success are our subconscious belief systems. This is something that Stu touches upon in his book, but I feel like when it comes to the subconscious and also belief systems, it's really hard for us to pinpoint them. So I'm wondering if you could share what we can do to figure out what our subconscious belief systems are telling us.
Okay, that's a great point, Mark. And just to illustrate how this works, I'm going to ask you a couple questions so we can, you know, the audience and everyone can kind of see why it is so difficult. And then we'll go into some tricks on how to uncover your own subconscious limiting beliefs. But first of all, Mark, let me just ask you something. Say that I had a circle. It's like a pie chart, okay? And this circle represents all of the entire knowledge of the world, okay? And I asked you, I said, Mark, you're a smart guy, especially, you know, you've done so many amazing things already. So this is going to be interesting, but what slice, how big of a slice of that pie would you put, you know, draw on that circle and say, this is all the information I know of all the world's information?
Wow. I mean, do you definitely need I know a lot based on my general niche, but like, I mean, the whole world, you have to put like a microscope to it.
Right. I mean, it's like a sliver of a sliver, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But then if you were to actually look at this circle, it'd probably be like maybe a 20% slice, maybe a little less, 15%. Now, Mark, if you see there's this microscopic slice, and this is things you know, and then there's this slightly bigger slice, what do you think that one would represent?
The slightly bigger slice would represent more capacity.
Correct, but there's a word for that, and it's things you know that you don't know. Like, give me an example, Mark, of something that you know that you don't know.
Oh, I see. like dancing.
Okay. You know of it, and you realize that you don't know it.
Yeah. Okay. Like, and there's a lot I don't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now, what can you do with that? What can you do with the things in life that you know that you don't know?
Learn about them.
Exactly. Now, there's like 85% left of this pie. What do you suppose that represents?
Things that you don't know at all, like anything about or their existence.
Yes. And what we call that is things you don't know that you don't know. Now, when you don't know that you don't know something, Mark, what can you do with that?
Nothing unless you learn about it.
Correct. You can't. It's a blind spot. You absolutely can't do anything about it. And so what happens is we are walking around, and as much as we know and as much as we don't know, there's about 10, 20, 30 times more that we don't even know that we don't know. We're just unaware of it. And so what happens is when we can start becoming aware of our blind spots, then at least we have a chance to learn about them and grow in that area. Whereas before, we couldn't even access that. And so that's the discussion that we're going to have really quick, about how to unlock these subconscious limiting beliefs. Because until you realize what they are, they're in this realm of you don't know that you don't know. And just by the fact that you're listening to this right now, you're starting to understand that now you realize there are things that you don't know. And it could be that people had never even thought that there were things that they didn't know that they didn't know. And now they do. And so that in itself is a very liberating consciousness. And so for us, if we want to learn about these subconscious belief systems, there's a couple little hints, glimpses into them in our everyday lives that we can kind of get into. One of them is that self-talk that we have. So if we're going to do something and all of a sudden we start hearing a lot of self-talk, that's one way to know that we're up against some sort of limiting belief system. And that it requires a little further investigation. Or another thing is when we have repetitive experiences in our life. And let me give you an example of that. In this case, let's use this example where there's a student in high school or even college. And all the while, they can't seem to get past a C average GPA. And so it doesn't matter what class they're in. It doesn't matter how hard they study. It doesn't matter, you know, they could slack. They could study for hours. It's for some reason they can't get above a C average. Okay. And this would apply to people in life that maybe can't get above a certain income. can't seem to get a career, can't seem to get a certain type of relationship, et cetera, et cetera. If you were to backtrack this person's life, what you would find is that somewhere along the way, somebody, it could be a friend, it could be a teacher, it could be a parent, somewhere along the way, somebody or something said to this individual, you're not smart, or you're just an average student. And when that kid accepted that as a truth for his or her life, what happens now is they always will live up to the belief system they have about himself or herself. So in this case, the way that you could see this unconscious belief system is by the track record, the C average track record, no matter what they tried. Or it could be that someone always and only makes $60,000 a year. Or they always seem to, you know, blow a big deal, or they always seem to get close in terms of their business and then something falls apart, or they get a great relationship and within 3 or 4 months, you know, the drama happens, or whatever it might be. Those are repetitive life events that warrant some exploration into why, when that started happening, why, around what kind of emotional event did that start happening? And then you can unpack, what is that subconscious belief system?
So, I mean, a lot of interesting insights. That main one being like all these different things that happen to us seem perhaps really small at the time, but they have a really big subconscious impact. And I feel like when you hear this, or you come across, you listen, or this, you think about this episode, like those kinds of thoughts pop up, like, hey, maybe that's why I'm in this situation. Maybe that's the belief that is making me where I am. So how do we go about, as you mentioned, unpacking that so that we change it? Because it's good to identify it, but then how do we flip it around?
Yeah, okay, so that's a good question. And so for the listeners listening right now, one thing you can do is you can make a list of any emotional experience you remember from ages 0 to 8. And when I say emotional experience, it doesn't have to be bad. It can be bad or good, but anything you remember, even if you think, oh, I remember that, but it was so small, or man, I remember someone said that. The fact that you still remember it usually means it was an emotional experience, unless it was so traumatic that you've actually blocked it out of your mind. But then you still want to go there. That's step one. So you might say, oh man, I remember when this teacher yelled at me. I was in first grade. I was about, you know, 6 or 7 years old. And the teacher yelled at me and said that I was never going to amount to anything, or something like that, right? If you remember that event, then you can start looking at how that event has shown up in your life. And that's step two. And then step three is you want to weigh the costs and the benefits. Now, the first thing that most people say, Mark, is they say, well, there are no benefits. Well, that's not true. And I'll tell you why that's not true. Because human beings, it has been proven that human beings, being an animal, will only do something when the perceived benefit outweighs the cost. Okay, so that means, you know, like someone who smokes, right? They know it's bad for them. They know logically it's bad for them, but the animalistic perceived benefit of getting that cigarette or getting the nicotine high or whatever it is outweighs that long-term cost, where you can't necessarily feel the negative impacts right away. Likewise with food, when people are overweight, etc. So there is a benefit, and the benefit could be many things. There's usually three benefits that most people turn to and they're unaware of. Again, this is part of the unconscious. The first benefit that most people have is being comfortable. Okay. Now, quite frankly, this is probably the biggest benefit. And Mark, it's just like you and I have talked about entrepreneurship. One of the things that made you so successful is getting out of the comfort zone. And we hear that a lot, and it's very cliche. But let me just explain how this comfort zone thing can sabotage people. Mark, have you ever heard of anyone winning like the Ultra Mega Millions lottery?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Have you ever heard how long it takes most people to lose those millions and millions of dollars?
6 to 12 months, I think.
Yeah, 6 to 12 months, less than a year. So you know, you and I are probably sitting here thinking, how on earth could someone possibly lose millions of dollars? I mean, even if you put it in treasury bills, 30-year treasury bills with 3% interest, you'd never have to work again. But the fact of the matter is the people that play the lottery oftentimes have not had the consciousness, the awareness, have not developed themselves mentally to the point where they're ready for that money. And so what happens is their unconscious programs want to be comfortable, and the comfortable feeling that they have is living the lifestyle they're accustomed to. And so somehow they find a way to lose millions and millions of dollars in less than a year. And most people look at that and they're like, that is crazy. But that's what happens. Okay, so comfort is the number one benefit. The number two benefit is being right. And let me explain how this works. Say that this example that I was using about this kid who got a C average. Okay, if now he has bought into this belief that he's an average student, what we do, Mark, is it's kind of like we seek out ways to prove ourselves right, because otherwise we would be crazy. It would mean that we were crazy. So, you know, someone might say, you know, Mark, I'm no good at relationships. I suck at relationships. I can't, you know, I don't, the girls are terrible. You know, they're crazy and whatever, and on and on and on. This person who says that will always and only choose people to be in relationship with that aren't compatible, that are that way, so that he or she is actually proving themselves right at their own expense. It's like the self-fulfilling prophecy. So you got being comfortable, you got being right. And then the last one, the last kind of benefit that people get is looking good. Okay, and this is kind of the reason that people are afraid to take risks, they're afraid to fail, because they're so addicted to looking good. And so let's say someone has made fun of you. Mark, you know, you're a successful guy. You're online. There's trolls out there. Okay. If you're not ready to look foolish, if you're not okay with, you know, being authentic and vulnerable, that is really going to prevent you from succeeding, because what'll happen, Mark, is you'll never take any risks. You will be so addicted to this looking good thing that you'll try to please everyone. You'll kind of go along with the flow instead of standing for something. And whenever you stand for anything, you're going to have people that love you, you're going to have people that hate you, and you're going to have people that could care less. And so those three things are often the hidden benefits at the root of whatever a subconscious limiting belief system could be.
And those three things that we go after, they're all true. I mean, we all have different examples of going after them. Again, this is a case-by-case basis. Some of us really go after looking good. Others go after looking right. Others go after comfort. But we all do it to varying degrees. We just have to think about the long term and how our actions today really affect who we become. And I do want to also address something that you said in your book. You mentioned that like the how-to stuff isn't enough to be successful, because then we'd all be, you say something like we'd all be like skinny, rich, and other stuff like that, like if all the how-to stuff was enough. So with education being a part of it, but not the whole story, what are some of the other parts of that narrative that lead to success?
Okay, that's a great question, Mark. So there's usually two ways that people say they need to be better, to become better, or whatever, to be successful, or whatever it is. The first is education. You know, you've heard this a ton, I'm sure, and you provide a lot of content and education. But people will say, if I just had the right information, I could do this and I would be successful. Okay, I mean that is not true, because the information is out there everywhere. The other group of people want motivation. Okay, so education on its own is not enough. Second group of people, they say, if I was just motivated, if I just had more motivation, I would be able to succeed. And again, you know, you have the Tony Robbins of the world, motivational seminars that people go to, and they get primed and pumped and all excited. And about 2 days later, you know, it's gone. It wears off. You know, the resolutions, New Year's resolutions, people get motivated, they get excited. And 2 weeks later, you know, 2 weeks out of 52 weeks, they're back to normal. Okay. So obviously motivation isn't enough. So education alone, it doesn't do it, because you still are up against your programs, your blind spots. And motivation, again, is so temporary. But there is one way that people can really smash through their limiting belief systems without even having to identify them, quite frankly. And it's called experiential learning. Okay, now this is what would be done in something like a personal growth workshop as opposed to a motivational seminar. And let me explain the difference. A personal growth workshop has different activities, exercises, things that really pull a person out of their comfort zone, push their buttons in a controlled environment, so then that person can see how they show up versus how they think they show up. And the example is this. Mark, I don't know if you've ever heard this question, but there's like one of those simulation questions where it says you're walking through like a train station. The train is barreling down. It's got 15 people in it, and there's a person stuck on the tracks. Do you save the person on the tracks by switching the train to a different track, in which case the car will crash and kill the 15 people? Or do you let the train keep going, it kills the one person on the tracks, but the 15 people survive? Have you ever heard something like that?
Oh, we're going back to philosophy for this one.
Okay, so that's a question that they'll ask, right? And everyone will say, like, they'll give an answer, right? You don't know how you're going to react until you're in that situation, though. There's just no way to simulate that other than being in that situation. So what these personal development workshops do is they put you in safe situations that simulate stress in the real world so that you can actually figure out, oh my gosh, this is how I actually reacted. This is how I actually showed up. I would have never thought that, because I remember telling my friends that I would have done this, but oh my gosh, in actuality, I did that. And what happens is that smashes open a limiting belief system. It allows you to understand how you're showing up versus how you think you're showing up. And then you can say, I don't like that. Or you can say, I love that. It's not that it's bad or good. And if you don't like it, then you can say, I'm aware now and I'm going to change that behavior. I'll give an example from my personal life in just a second. This is opposed to motivational seminars where you sit in a chair, someone is giving a seminar on stage, you know, is maybe having you jump up and down or whatever, but you're not doing anything. You're not in the trenches, so to speak. You're not learning. You're just sitting there, you know, listening, and only 10% of that usually sticks with people anyway. So here is an example from my own life. I was extremely shy. I never was able to be vulnerable to share my feelings or anything like that. I went to one of these personal development workshops, and I even remember, and I'll tell this in a second, but the teacher was, you know, I was a personal trainer. I was all into personal growth. I'd read books, all this stuff. I'd never been to an experiential seminar. And so I didn't really know how I was going to show up. So I was telling this guy, the instructor, hey, you know, I'm here to do this. And he's like, well, if you already know this, why are you here? And I'm like, well, sometimes, you know, you need a coach to help you. You know, you can't do everything on your own. And he's like, yeah, that's right. And so like, it was a 3-day workshop. At the end of the first day, which was like an 8-hour day, I was sharing with my friend who I went with that, geez, you know, I have a photographic memory, but I don't remember anyone's eyes. Like, that's the only part of a person I don't remember is their eyes. For some reason, I couldn't look people in the eye. So I told that to the instructor. He goes, do you want to work on that today? I said, yeah, I'd love to work on that today. So he's like, oh, well, I'll give you an opportunity. Well, I thought he was going to call me out, you know, like, hey, Stu, you know, you shared something. He didn't. He said, does anyone want to share anything? And I'm like, wait, is he talking about me? I mean, I'm still like hesitating. So finally, yeah, I do. I said, I can remember everything about you except your eyes. He goes, why is that? I said, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable looking people in the eyes. And he looked at me, Mark, and he said, well, why is it that you feel inferior? Like a very pointed question. And I said, all of a sudden what popped out was, I think it's because my brother always like beat me up, abused me growing up, and, you know, put me down, and I just don't feel like I'm worthy of looking someone in the eye. which, by the way, is one of the 10 subconscious roadblocks. People don't feel worthy of success. He goes, do you want to handle this right now? I said, yeah. He said, come up here. What would you say to your brother right now if you had the chance? And I couldn't say anything. I was hesitating. So he called. He said, does anyone in here today look kind of like your brother? I said, yeah, this guy does. He goes, come on up here. He said, pretend this is your brother. What would you say? And I said, I'd say, Scott, I said, you made me feel so terrible growing up, and I forgive you for that, and I love you, and I want to have a relationship with you, and I just want you to know I've been holding this against you my whole life, and I'm sorry for doing that. And I mean, I'm bawling at this point. I'm crying. And then he goes, well, when are you going to talk to your brother? When do you want to call him? I said, I don't know, maybe this weekend. He goes, well, how do you know he's still alive right now? I go, I don't know. He goes, so when are you going to call him? I said, right now. So I called my brother. I left him a message. And then this guy comes up to me in the workshop, and he's like, way to be vulnerable, man. And up until that point, Mark, honestly, I didn't even know what the word vulnerable meant. And so that was such a profound experience for me. From that point forward, I decided that I was going to be vulnerable in my life. And the strangest thing happened. It was like no problem from that point forward to look anyone in the eyes. And my brother called me back, and we have a relationship now. And it was just the most amazing thing to learn how much power is in being vulnerable and authentic. That's an example of how an experiential workshop can unlock these things in our lives that we have no idea what they are.
And you do mention the vulnerable aspect, definitely something. It is important to be vulnerable because you let your true self out. You can get rid of a lot of your baggage, and people really like it when you're vulnerable. Now, there is a thin line between being vulnerable and being the victim. And I mean, I'm wondering, Stu, if you could share your thoughts on that. My thoughts on that thin line would be vulnerability, being able to just say it and move on, while victim just like keep talking about it over and over again. But I'm wondering what your thought on that line is.
Yeah, so vulnerability is often misused. The word is misused. And so let me define it how I've come to know it, because I think using that definition will open up an entirely new world for people. A lot of people, when they hear the word vulnerable, kind of hear this, I'm opening myself to attack, or I'm being weak, or I'm letting my guard down and someone can take advantage of me. That's kind of how they use the word. But when I'm talking about being vulnerable, you could probably use it synonymously with authentic. And what that means is you become so okay with yourself. You become so okay with everything about you, who you are, how you think, your flaws, you know, things that you've been self-conscious about, whatever it might be. You're just okay with you. You're good with you. You're good with who you are. And so in that place, what you can do, Mark, is you can share how you feel, what you think, what you want, what you desire. And if you're truly okay with it, then nobody can touch you. I mean, it's actually much stronger. You're in a place of total fortitude in this state of vulnerability where someone can make fun of you and you go, you know, they're, man, you got a big nose. Yeah, I do have a big nose. And that's it. You know, I mean, you're okay with it. So no one can touch you at that point because you're not hiding anything. You're not afraid of anything. You're not trying to look good in any way. You're okay looking like a fool. You're okay being uncomfortable. You're okay if, you know, being wrong. You're just okay. You don't buy into those three subconscious addictions we talked about. Conversely, when you're authentic and vulnerable, you're also responsible, meaning you don't take the blame for things, but you own your choices. You acknowledge that anything in life is a choice. And if you whittle it down to the most basic root, your choice in any situation is how you react, how you respond, and how you feel about it. So the opposite is victim. And all that means is when you're a victim, you blame other things. You don't take responsibility for your choices. And all that really does, Mark, is it takes the power away from you. Whereas being responsible and vulnerable gives you total foundational power.
And I really like those differences you pointed out, because I know that vulnerable and victim, those are two words that some people associate very similarly with one another. So I'm really happy that we did hit on that. Another thing that I do want to hit on is that there are a lot of people who they set big goals for themselves and they're moving on that journey, but for some reason they feel stuck. In some cases, people keep on just missing the same goals over and over again. So I'm wondering if you could share for us, what do you believe is the reason why some people continue to, as they get feel like they're getting closer to their goals, like suddenly like get stuck or move back or just in the end miss their goals and not realize their potential?
Okay, so there's really, in my opinion, there's two main reasons. One is everything we just talked about. They either don't think that they deserve it deep down, so they set these goals because they think that they should. But whoever they are setting these goals, they deep down don't think they deserve it. Like maybe someone sets a goal of making $100,000 a year, but they just don't think they deserve it. So, you know, if they're an entrepreneur, when it comes to selling, it's like, well, I don't want to be pushy. I don't want to offend anyone. You know, and you're never going to make $100,000 without offending someone. And so that's reason number one. But the other reason is could be because their commitment isn't high enough. And this, I actually just had a couple conversations with two very successful women. And one of them said that she was successful because she literally had no backup plan. And, you know, it was either do or die pretty much, you know, feast or famine. And I kind of pointed out to her, wow, you know, that's like Cortez, you know. And Mark, you probably know the story of Cortez. He goes down to Mexico or wherever it is with his folks, and they're outnumbered like 10,000 to 1 by the natives. And so he burns the boats. He's like, hey, you guys see that smoke over there? And his soldiers are like, yeah, what is that? He's like, those are our boats burning. I just set them on fire. Now you have a choice. You can either fight or you can die. And today, they speak Spanish. So what happened was, when you can raise your level of commitment so high, Mark, that it's like to fail is just not an option. Like it's just the pain is too much for not making the goal. I can almost guarantee that anyone would reach a goal. Now, see, people don't realize and don't like that pressure. But I'm telling you, if someone is listening to this right now, their kid's life was on the line, and it had to do with one of their goals, they would get that goal. And we hear about this all the time when single moms, you know, they're holding like 3 jobs, you know, going to school and somehow putting their kids, you know, getting their kids ready to go to college, even though no one in the family's ever gone to college. And then they interview the mom, you know, how is it possible that you were able to work 16 hours a day and, you know, get a degree online and take care of 3 kids, and now they're going to college? And the moms will just say, I just did whatever it would take, because their commitment was so high. Now, when it comes to like my clients, right, with weight loss, let's say someone sets a goal, they say, I want to lose, you know, 20 pounds in, you know, the next 40 days. It's possible. Now, if they don't have much on the line, the likelihood of them doing that is extremely low, because it's very hard. You have to give up food. You have to eat things that may not taste great. You have to work out, which is uncomfortable. It might be cold outside. They don't want to do it. Now, if I said, okay, I want you to write a check for $10,000. And if you don't get that goal, you're going to give that check to, let's say, either a charity or the political party that you don't support. And every day they look at this $10,000 check that they're going to kiss goodbye if they don't make that goal. There's some number, Mark. Maybe it's not 10,000. Maybe it's 20,000. I don't know. But the stress, the cost of not hitting that goal would be great enough that they would get that goal. And what most people do, Mark, they set these goals and there's just no pressure. You know, if they don't make it, they don't make it. They're so used to not making the goal. And they're so used to it that their brain says, even when they make the goal, their brain says, yeah, right, you're probably not going to do this. Now, that has a lot to do with a person's word and their integrity, which we could also get into. But those are the main two reasons.
And it's interesting you mention not putting enough on the line for your goals. And you need a reason to act. You don't act just for the sake of acting. And that's what Stu is telling us. He's saying that you have this goal that you're going after, but why do you have to get it done other than to put a check mark next to it? So if you really put more on the line, think about why you're actually going after the goal, you could get that goal and you could even exceed your expectations as well. But putting more on the line really does help and gives you that extra push to accomplish your goals. Another thing that really helps is developing the right habits. So Stu, I'm wondering if you could share with us what you would consider some of your habits that have been essential to your success.
Okay, well, I think that's a really great question, and there's a lot here that we can talk about. But if I was going to do like a broad picture, the thing I think that most people are missing that I have always been good at, which I think has contributed to my success, is what I had just kind of mentioned with the integrity part. And let me explain what I mean. I don't mean, and when I say integrity, I don't mean like ethics, and I don't mean morality. I don't mean whether someone's a good person or a bad person. What I mean when I say integrity is how consistent they are with what they say and what they do. And here's what I mean by that. When I was talk about like subconscious beliefs, when I was like maybe 7, I remember I had some friends that were older, and these were kids that I really looked up to. And I'll never forget this. This is an emotional experience. And I remember this one kid said, "Listen, if you promise something and you say you promise it and you break your promise, you're going to go straight to hell." And for whatever reason, I believe that. Okay, now whether that's true or not, which obviously you and I as adults are like, well, that's silly. The fact of the matter is it instilled a belief system in me, which was actually a good belief system. It helped me, that said, if you promise something, you can't break that promise. And now this is when I'm 7. So all of a sudden I'm this 7-year-old that if I promise something to anyone, I do it. I don't care how hard it is. I don't care if I don't feel good, if I feel tired, whatever. I do it because the fear of going to hell is so great in my mind as a 7-year-old that I start doing it. Well, fast forward, 25 years, that's what I still do. If I say I'm going to do something, I do it. I say what I mean and I mean what I say. And that is integrity. And that even trickles down to being on time for meetings. Or if I say I'm going to call someone, I call someone. And so what we see in society now, which is kind of the norm, is that people are late all the time. People never follow through on their promises. Parents don't follow through on their promises to their children, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we started the interview late today, Mark. You were late. I mean, I'm not ragging on you, but you were late. You were 2 minutes late, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was here on time waiting at my computer. You were late. Now, there's a price for that somewhere along the line. All right. You're somewhere out of integrity somehow, Mark. But in the United States, we have come to accept that so frequently that we just brush it off. Okay. What I'm telling you is that for the listeners, if you're listening to this, that is the very first step to take for your goals to turn out. That's your very first step and habit to make for everything to turn out in life. Because what happens is over time, if you always do what you say, if you always meet your promises, then when you say something, when you set goals, etc., your subconscious says, well, damn, every time I say something, I have to do it. I don't sometimes do it. I don't break my promises. I have to do it. And what will happen is internally, your body, your subconscious will find a way to get it done. And that's why there's certain people that when they say they're going to do something, you believe them just because you know that when they say stuff, they mean it. And then there's certain people that when they say something, you never believe it because they just never follow through. And that is one of the key habits that anybody can start making today, where the pain The pain and the thought of not living up to your word is so detrimental, because you've created this habit and this life where you're always in integrity, that it's so painful to think of not following through that you find a way to get it done.
And it's interesting you mentioned the integrity aspect, because that really affects how you approach your goals, how you approach your life. So I definitely like that habit that you have for yourself. Another great habit is to learn as much as possible. And I know you're doing that by listening to this podcast and learning, as we've mentioned before. It's just one of the parts to success. It's not the whole thing, but when you know what you need to know, that's definitely very important. And then we get the whole implementation part next. So with learning in mind, I'm wondering, Stu, if you could share with us three books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Okay, so if I were to give my top three books, the first one would probably be The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. The second book I would say that has probably impacted me the most, probably Robert Kiyosaki's book, which was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Talk about a mind shift. Just shifting a mind into a wealth state of mind, and how wealthy people think and how to invest. And then the third book that absolutely rocked my world and has totally changed the way I do things in life was Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek. And that's kind of a cliche book, but it's because it's so good. I mean, it really is that good.
Stu, thank you for sharing those book recommendations with us. Those will all be in the show notes, markgaberti.com/E317. And before we wrap up this episode, Stu, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Ooh, that's a great question. Okay, here's what I would say about that. And this comes out of Robert Kiyosaki's book, and this has really made the difference for me in a lot of things. Most people, and this is kind of from his book, and I'll talk about how he talks about wealth and then how you would apply this question to anything. He says, most people say, I can't afford that. I don't have enough money. But he said, if you want to be successful, instead of saying, I can't do this or I can't do that, ask yourself constantly, how could I do that? So if you're listening right now and you're like, man, gosh, I want to make $1 million, but it's not possible. Instead, constantly be in the question, how could I make $1 million? Or how could I find the most amazing relationship in my life? Or how could I quit my job and work for myself full time and still support my family? When you ask the question, how could I, it opens up all of your subconscious awareness, and you'll start finding those answers.
Stu, thank you for sharing with us that great question that really gets us into how can we do what we want to do instead of thinking about limiting beliefs. So thank you for that question. Thank you for sharing all of your great insights throughout time together. If you guys want to learn more about Stu, I'll give you a few. Stu will give you a few places where you can find him. But get his book, The Novo Method. That will be again in the show notes. But Stu, in addition to your book, what are some of the other ways that we can learn more about you?
Okay, that's a great question. So the best place is to go to my main website, which is stuschafer.com, and that's spelled stuschafer.com. And then for your listeners, I'm actually going to give them a special price on the book and fitness package, the Novo Method Success Pack. And they can go to stuschafer.com/special. The book is not sold in stores, and it'll be exclusively for your listeners.
Stu, thank you so much for offering all of us that special, which will again be in the show notes. And thank you so much for coming on Breakthrough Success and sharing all of your great insights with us. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Mark. Awesome. It's great being here, and I hope that we helped a few people.
Want to dominate the podcasting industry? Now you can. with your free copy of my book, Podcast Domination. You'll learn how to launch, grow, and monetize your very own show. And whether you are a beginner or an expert, this book has a lot of golden nuggets for you. We'll cover the cost of producing this book. All we ask is that you cover the shipping. To get your copy, head over to markgaberti.com/PD.